You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Next up, Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
You're listening to Technology Bites. That's what you're listening to, just in case you didn't know.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up for us.
He sounded like he's in a good mood, though. You know, it's usually much more
Russian
and depressing.
That's it, really, because the rest of the show, it's all grumble, grumble.
He's used up all his energy on the intro now.
He's winded. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Rivals.
Wow, everybody's here. This is awesome. Hooray. Well, thanks to everyone who came out to the Geek Gathering last week, and by everyone I mean Flicted. No, we had a good Geek Gathering. It was a good one. Somebody actually commented, though, they were kind of disappointed that, you know, they usually when they come up, you know, there's all kinds of stuff lit up and going on, and we didn't have a lot of gadgets out.
We'll have to bring that back. It's been tough with electricity for the most part, because we've either got to, like, pull
and
a
cold.
Connection. And cold, yeah.
Yeah, fire and Arduino don't mix.
No, I don't like to melt the circuit boards from fire. Like,
but anyway, it was just interesting that somebody noted that. They said, you know, it was like, they weren't disappointed per se, but
if that person wants to pay for Con to put an electrical plug outside, then
all we need is an extension cord.
The problem
and
is when it's cold, you have to put it through the door, and then it keeps the door open. And
yeah, that's been the main thing. It's just in the summer it was fine because they didn't mind having like that, but with the bitter cold, we've been closing it. I'll just hunt up one of those. And I think even David Fretz has one, but one of those big like portable UPSs with the handle on it. It'll push, because we're running 9-volt systems, 12-volt systems. We can push that for a couple of hours.
We need a food truck to show up with a generator.
Yeah.
Just plug into that.
No, the Blinken box needs to add lithium-ion batteries.
I think he's working on going nuke with it. We just need more plutonium. Or some banana peels.
1.21 gigawatts.
Well, at any rate, it was a good time. So thanks to everyone who came out. And those of you who didn't, sorry you missed it. And
we'll see you next month.
Yeah, sure. Maybe we will. We. Who's this we? Mr. I don't go to the geek gatherings.
I'm part of the show.
I'm
the
there.
The collective we. The royal we.
The royal we.
I'm there by association. If Technology Bites is there, Groovehouse is there.
That's right.
By omission. All right. Visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also come hang out on IRC, Internet Relay Chat, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bites. You can use your own IRC client if you're IRC savvy. Otherwise, go to geekradio.com and use our web client to join in the fun, the show within a show. Wow, it's already full. There's a lot of people in there. And phone number 713-526-5738. We will be taking your calls tonight during the show. And it's always fun to try to...
If you're phoning in, let it ring. We'll get to you as soon as we can.
Groovehouse is doing the best he can. He's actually...
As fast as I can.
He's here to answer phones. Not just like in theory, not because we're here. But he's actually here. And he will take your call. He will...
we will take your call.
There you go. Yeah, we'll take your call. But, you know, when you call in and you get ready to be on the air, don't ask all your questions to Groovehouse. He's not here to solve your problems. He's here to get you ready to be on the air so we can solve your problems on the air because we need the content. All right. So that is all I've got for right now. It's nice and chilly outside. Or at least it's not Atlanta, right? So we're all grateful for that. And we're going to hand it off to San Antonio in the Technology Bites info shot since we have Pete right there. He's right there. We're going to do the info shot. Take it away, Technology Bites.
It's the Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Of course. You know, they didn't make a sound while all the rest of the show happens, but at the time when my mic has to be opened, then the dogs bark. So the news. Do you have broadband internet? Do you like to watch streaming movies and TV on Netflix? Well, in general, Netflix does tests on the speed of their stuff. And, you know, we've talked about network neutrality, you know, with that whole court ruling thing about not having, not allowing network neutrality to be enforced right now. Overall, by Netflix's testing, your connection from most internet providers is getting faster, unless, of course, you happen to be somebody who uses Comcast, which I'm sure no one listening here uses Comcast since that's the major provider to Houston, or Verizon Fios for internet access at home, in which case it got slower. Now, the thing that I will say immediately is there is currently not proof that Verizon and Comcast are throttling Netflix, because the other possibility is that maybe their networks just suck and have gotten worse without it being specific to Netflix. So that, you know, so on the one hand, it's basically, I guess it's a war between having a crummy network and evil. It's one of those two things. They're either jacking with Netflix or they just don't care to keep the speeds up for their customers. So you can choose which one sounds better to you. Some of it is there's sort of a big drop in Fios really dropped. Fios was dramatically lower, and Comcast dropped about half as much as Verizon was overall faster. And basically the chart that I've got goes from January 2013 to February. So it's very recent. And after October, it just plummets, essentially. Comcast's average speed for Netflix users have dropped dramatically in just a handful of months. From January through September of 2013, Comcast bounced around between 2 megabits per second and about 2.13 megabits per second. But starting in October, their performance fell, and by January, it was closer to 1.5 megabits per second. Fios saw a similar, though not as quite precipitous, drop because it wasn't as high in the first place. Back when Netflix first started publishing their ISP speed rankings in 2012, Fios and Comcast were in positions number 2 and number 3 right behind Google Fiber. Now they rank number 7 and number 14 as far as their speed with the networks. You know, one of the things is the ratings reflect the average performance of all Netflix streams on each ISP's network from November 2012 through September 2013, and then they changed the metric in October, so maybe that may have an impact on this. The new way they measure it is average performance during prime time starting in October 2013. And yes, that's when it started plummeting for both. But it's been getting worse still. It's been going down. The average is well below the peak performance due to many factors, including the variety of encodes that Netflix uses to deliver TV shows and movies they carry, as well as home Wi-Fi and the variety of devices that their members use. The odd thing is, of course, things didn't dramatically change for for most of the other ISPs, although MediaLink and AT&T UVerse also saw big drops. Cablevision, Optimum, Cox, and Suddenlink have maintained a decidedly upward trajectory. In other words, the available speed during the prime time has gone up versus the rest. So it will be interesting to keep an eye on why this is happening. Verizon has denied it. Ars Technica investigated the issue specifically with Verizon last week and didn't find proof that they were selectively throttling traffic, but they also didn't find any proof that they aren't. It's just not possible to tell from the outside one way or the other right now, apparently. Perhaps the FCC, with its interim case-by-case stance on net neutrality, will eventually take a look and decide what's going on. If you want to see how yours compares and look at the numbers for yourself, if you go – Netflix has their ISP Speed Index, and it's at ispspeedindex.netflix.com, and you can go look for yourself, see what you think. Another Verizon news, they tease more is coming. Apparently, more is coming at a slower rate over your network. I think this is an effect, you know, this is one of those to watch that I mentioned to watch for. With some of the changes that T-Mobile was doing, the more is coming, anonymous tipsters told Engadget that the tease relates to new more everything plans and reportedly involved dropping the prices for some data plans and raising data caps on certain plans. While T-Mobile's Uncarrier strategy is shaking up the industry, revised plans and costs for Verizon customers are more likely to directly combat AT&T's recent shared data plan changes. You know, they made some changes, and the plus side is they're competing at least. I don't want to overspeak it, but it's a good sign when they start cutting prices in reaction to each other, because it means that, you know, those of us using these devices, which more and more people are using them with data more often, can, we'll benefit. So that's why I'm keeping an eye on some of these things. It's not a promo for any particular cellular provider, but it's a good idea. And here's one. Unfortunately, we have a loss. Flappy Bird is gone. I don't know if you were into Flappy Bird or not. I was not. But Dong Nguyen, as promised, the developer of Flappy Bird, removed the popular game from the App Store. He had said he was going to do it over the weekend. It's been the number one downloaded free app on Apple's App Store for almost a month. It was generating $50,000 a day in revenue from in-app ads. He had previously expressed frustration at the attention he's received about the sudden popularity of his game. In a tweet last week, he said, "Please give me peace." And yesterday he announced that the game would be removed from the App Store today. Flappy Bird no longer shows up in search, developers' app listing, and top free games. The direct link for the game still shows in the App Store at the time of this writing, which was Sunday at 9:30 Pacific time, but it was unavailable for download. In subsequent tweets, he said the removal was not due to legal reasons and that he was not interested in selling the game. If you've already downloaded it, you can keep playing it. And actually, there are phones for sale on eBay and other places because they have Flappy Bird. So some people apparently are that addicted to Flappy Bird. I'm not one of them, but in case you are, I wanted to let you know why other people can't get hooked alongside you. And now, let's see. Now I'm missing one. I had another story ready, and it's not showing up. Here it is. I'll open it up. Coming up after this is Apple rumors, just bunches and bunches of them. It's the floodgates opened, I guess, in time for Valentine's Day. This one's interesting. Google has linked a deal with VMware to allow legacy Windows software to run on Chrome OS. That was announced today. The deal will allow Windows-only enterprise software like accounting applications to work on Google's low-cost Chrome OS laptops and desktop boxes. With most of its line priced at or under $300, Chromebook laptops have jumped in sales, capturing 21% of U.S. notebook sales and 8% of the total PC and tablet market in 2013, which their market share was negligible the year before. Up until now, it's been unable to run anything but websites and Chrome web apps, which left a lot of businesses out in the cold. But now, with Chromebook's affordability, centralized management console, and lower security risks, there's something available to them. You combine those positives with Microsoft Windows 8 stumbles and the impending end of life of XP, and Google hopes it has an opening to attract businesses looking for a new approach to workplace computers. So businesses can purchase access to VMware's Horizon Desktop as a Service to run on Chrome OS. At first, it'll only be available as an on-site service, although a Chrome Web Store app is in the works. So, you know, Google last week, I didn't report this because it wasn't that big a deal, but last week it was announced that Google's targeting conference calls and video meetings with Chromebox for meetings. It becomes apparent that enterprise sales are far more than a mere side project for Chromebooks. It seems to me that Google may have learned something that Apple didn't for a long time, which is that targeting the enterprise is a place you can make some success, and you can gain a lot of ground and a lot of market share by not kind of ignoring it, frankly. Now the orgy of Apple rumors. Of course, let's see, the ever popular larger displays, again, a rumor from the South China Morning Post that there will be two versions of the next generation iPhone featuring a 4.7 and a 5.5-inch sapphire screens. Now, there's a new twist on it. That's the, instead of glass, using sapphire. Citing industry insiders who have, quote, seen the prototypes, unquote, publication also says that both phones will feature a pixel density of 441 pixels per inch, which is way up from the 326 ppi currently found on the iPhone 5S and 5C. Furthermore, the Hong Kong-based newspaper adds that the new devices will feature a flat screen instead of a curved screen, as suggested by prior reports, and that Apple will be discontinuing the iPhone 5C in favor of an iPhone 5S made of lower-cost materials. The rumors have been varying, and Apple's been experimenting with various sizes for the next generation iPhone since early 2013, with size rumors varying from 4.7 to 5.7 inches. The Korea Herald reported yesterday that the iPhone 6 would have a bezel-free display, so that it would just kind of cut that down to nothing. We'll see how that goes. It also reported last week that GT Advance, the company that's partnered with Apple to open a plant in Arizona, was gearing up to mass-produce sapphire displays meant for the iPhone 6. While another report yesterday said Apple's sapphire production would go to the iWatch instead of the iPhone, the volume of raw material and equipment – now we're down to that. People to figure out the rumors are looking at the raw materials purchased by a company to figure out what Apple's doing. Apparently, the raw materials would suggest plans to manufacture approximately 200 million 5-inch sapphire displays to meet iPhone demand. Well, that's some neat rumors. Let's see the other ones. This actually is different than the other one. With the rumors are that the there are advancements in LED backlighting that will allow a thinner iPhone 6 and upcoming iPad, according to a report from LED Inside. a division of research firm TrendForce. The report notes a thinner design will see Apple shifting from 0.6 millimeter thick side view LED backlights to 0.4 millimeter thick modules, but also questionably claims that the iPhone 6 will arrive in June. Most people expect the iPhone 6 to arrive in September or October, like we've seen in the past, you know, so that they have enough time to do all the features and such that they want. And then finally, the last Apple rumor is that a new Apple TV could come out as soon as April, according to Bloomberg. The one of the sources indicates that the hardware will have a faster processor and a simpler interface. Two other sources, meanwhile, say the device will ship sometime before Christmas, although the exact date is uncertain because Apple is trying to secure deals for programming and distribution, including one with Time Warner Cable. So I wonder if they're looking to – it's possible they're looking to have it replace your cable box or work with your cable box. In recent weeks, a number of pieces of evidence have pointed to an impending Apple TV refresh. You know, its basic design hasn't changed since March 2012, despite two new versions of iOS and increasingly intense competition from devices like the Roku 3 and the Chromecast. But there's not any rumors on the interface. Nobody's seen that, but the potential Time Warner support is expected to involve flowing cable TV through the Apple TV interface instead of the Time Warner box, which a deal with Time Warner would represent their first deal, Apple's first deal with a paid TV provider. We're Peter Hughes, and this was the Technology Bytes InfoShot News.
There you have it. Man, I was just watching this dramatic video footage of the sinkhole that opened up underneath the Corvette Museum.
Wow.
It looks like fake cars. Looks like toy cars in the dirt. It's just, yeah.
Like the
some priceless Corvettes gone.
Yeah. Yeah, like the millionth one produced and some old stuff from the 60s.
Where was this? Where did it happen?
It's at the National Corvette Museum in Kentucky.
Kentucky.
I guess they don't survey, or no one thinks to look underneath, or is this just some weird freak?
And you know, insurance does not cover sinkholes.
Really?
You have to get special insurance.
You have to get sinkhole insurance.
Sinkhole, yeah. Mudslides, landslides, sinkholes,
acts of God, like
acts
that?
Of God, nuclear war, nuclear accidents, war. None of that's covered under a regular insurance policy.
I don't know if Kentucky known for sinkholes. Maybe somebody was tunneling under there trying to get the Corvette. We are going to get a Corvette.
Finally got Mark Corvettes.
Mark Hamill reliving Corvette summer.
Maybe it's a giant gopher like Caddyshack.
The Mole Kingdom, the Underminer from The Incredibles.
In order to get a Corvette, you must think like a Corvette. Yeah, so, wow. All right, 713-526-5738. Somebody apparently called earlier and offered to install electricity at Cons. So,
although we are not,
we're not able authorized. To hire. We're not authorized to hire an electrician.
He is under a lease, probably with the.
I don't know
center.
That he wants outdoor. Yeah, out. Exactly. I don't think he wants to provide electricity to the world. You know, after hours.
Right.
I think.
Yeah, I was saying that had to be something that has a lock on it or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
Just plug something else into it.
I overstepped my bounds, and I apologize.
No, it wasn't your fault, really.
No, it was.
No, it was. Groove a culpa.
Groove a culpa.
No, Groovehouse, you needed to say, I've overstepped my bounds, and we apologize.
We are not
it's
amused.
It's our fault.
I'll take the blame on that one.
Ooh, we're just plural tonight. We're so plural. All right, 713-526.
You probably think this show is about you.
Well, you know, if this show ever gets to where it's generating $50,000 in ad revenue a day, I'm taking it off the air.
That's after a month. After a month anyway, yeah.
At least a month. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bytes, we've got all of our phone lines open. Groovehouse, look at you.
I looked up sapphire glass. I'm very impressed.
Is it the new glass for smartphones?
Smartphones, yeah. That's just like $30 to produce.
But it's the, what did you say, it's the
next hardest substance next to diamond.
Wow.
As far as, I guess, clear.
Is it made out of real sapphire?
It apparently is.
It's man-made created.
Yeah.
Like man-made
synthetic
diamonds.
Synthetic sapphire, yeah.
Man-made diamonds are still not cheap.
Extremely hard, scratch-resistant, melting point of over 2,000 degrees Celsius.
Oh, I'll break that.
And almost completely impermeable and impervious to caustic chemicals, unless you're Barrett.
Barrett will find exception. It's not Barrett tested,
right?
So I don't trust it completely.
He'll break the keyboard on the best iPhone, even though it's a on-screen keyboard.
If the glass isn't a point of failure, something else is. All right, Groovehouse is now answering our call. So we do have open lines here at Technology Bytes here in Houston, 713-526-5738. Somebody mentioned, I posted that video to the, or that thing about the Corvette Museum to my Facebook, and somebody said they're thinking of replacing the floor with acrylic to display the damage as art. Maybe they could use that sapphire glass. I can't believe that this place is going to be allowed to stay where a sinkhole of that size opened up under it.
Apparently about half the state of Kentucky sits on top of the kind of rock that has this. It's called karst. Karst conditions.
I didn't know that about Kentucky.
So you could just be hanging out anywhere and just sinkhole.
Boom, sinkhole.
Where'd you go?
It just makes it that much odder that people in Kentucky are pretty relaxed. You know, I don't know if you've been there, but they're pretty mellow.
You don't hear about sinkholes in Kentucky that I'm aware of. I mean, you hear about them in Florida, and there's a lot of relaxed people, a lot of relaxed brain dead people in Florida, right? 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse has already fielded a call to put them in the queue.
Oh, yeah.
713-526-KPFT. I guess it's all the bourbon in Kentucky that makes that work. All right. Groovehouse?
Could be the vibrations from the horses.
No, Pete was commenting about how relaxed people in Kentucky seem to be.
Suburban.
And that they... Suburban.
Suburban. Mint juleps.
All right. Groovehouse, yes, who do we have?
All right. Up first on the show, we are going to speak with Syed.
Syed, you're on the air with Technology Bytes. Hey, hello.
Hi. Sorry, didn't hear the little noise break there. I just wanted to know whether anyone had any experience or an opinion about the Galaxy Note, the phone, smartphone, where you can kind of write, you know, using a stylus and so on. I know there's tablet computers out there. I just wondered if the phone was just a miserable copy or whether it was actually something worth looking
at. The Galaxy Note phone, I think, came first before the Galaxy Note tablet.
Yeah, oh, really? I had no idea.
Are you speaking about just like the first generation of Galaxy Note or like the brand new Galaxy Note 3?
The brand new one. The brand new one that's out. Because I'd heard the first one had some bugs and it really wasn't all that. But now apparently there was some praise for it in the press. And I just wondered whether it was really worth something to look at or...
Well, what do you have right now?
Well, right now I just have a regular, you know, smartphone. I've got a HTC, but I don't even use, the swipe or anything like that. But the idea of being able to write something down real quick, because it appeals to me. I don't seem to have like a note-taking kind of a function, and I would think that'd be very, very convenient.
So the Galaxy Note has a stylus, right? No, don't know.
Yeah, it does. Ben that comes out of the Geek Gathering, has been carrying the notes since he's had every single one. And I know that he also installs, like, Cyanogen Mod, and he can put custom firmware on some of them. He's really happy with it. I would like to carry something like that, but I think the downside is do you want something that large to carry on with you day in, day out for note-taking? And if you're cool with that, that's fine. But it's not something that might comfortably go in a front pocket real easily.
Well, that, and I was wondering also if any comment on the battery life, because that's a problem.
We don't have any personal experience with it, but I will bet you a dollar that there's a number of reviews out there that address things like battery life and functionality on that device. I'm not that familiar with it. I'm not a huge Android fan, but if I was going to buy an Android device, I'd probably go with something like what Barrett has, which is the Nexus 5.
But you can get stylized.
You can get stylized for different
work with
any device,
iPhones or anything else, touch capacitive,
right?
Stuff, right? And so you could just get an app that allows you to do free drawing with your finger and use it with a stylus.
Really? I had no idea. But I take it this with at least with the Note, there would be integrated. I mean, have a place to put your stylus, right? So you wouldn't lose it.
That's true.
It may, although, I mean, if you want to save on space, it really comes down to screen real estate, how large of a screen you want. But I've seen lots of, third-party maker cases for Android phones that you can get that has a little stylus clip in there.
Very cool.
They're out there. You might not have like
it was an app, so that's something that you can actually.
Yeah, there's a number of note-taking apps and finger painting apps and things like that for all the mobile devices.
I think Evernote's one of the big popular ones.
Does it have writing recognition?
Yeah, I believe so. I've been using it for a while, and there are some other ones out there. There are four or five. Just go read the reviews and even install them all. See what you like.
But okay, you already have an Android phone. You could try out some of the apps just to see what they're like and see
and
what they might suggest.
With any phone, if you're concerned about battery life, if it turns out to not be what you need, there are any number of cases and such. I know people who have like the Mophie Juice Pack for different phones that adds a lot of hours. It adds more battery life to your phone.
Okay.
Without adding
very
a lot
cool.
of weight and thickness to it.
All right. Well, I certainly appreciate it. Thanks. I'll have to check that out.
All right. Thanks for your call tonight.
All right. Bye.
All right, 713-526-5738.
You can watch us all gang up on somebody's issues, not on the person, on solving their issues.
Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have next?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Joe.
Joe, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey guys, great show as usual. Just want to give you one little tip. I grew up in Kentucky, spent a big chunk of my life up there, and they have no sinkhole history.
No sinkholes. Okay.
No. Sorry about
Which
that.
Which half of the state were you in, though? Because it had said only that it was under half the state.
Are you familiar with the state at all?
Not terribly, no.
Not okay, a long time, but...
I was born on the east side and went to school on the west side.
Sinkholes weren't a thing.
Are all in the middle.
No. Maybe tobacco and horses and basketball, but no sinkholes.
This was around, what, Bowling Green, I think.
Yeah, that's the northern sort of tip. It's kind of near Cincinnati. Where I was born.
Maybe the hole came from Cincinnati.
Came from Ohio.
It's Ohio. Well, so, right, like I said, it seemed odd to me that because I hadn't heard anything about sinkholes in Kentucky, and then this apparently it's a thing. So
they have one of the largest cave complexes in America, but it's not related to sinkholes.
All right. Well, thanks for the information.
Have a good one.
All right. You too. All right, 713-526-5738. Now we've got the Kentucky sinkhole mystery solved.
So do they have any opinion of what caused the sinkhole?
Because
I know sometimes in like around Houston or even in Florida, sometimes a leaky water main will actually create a big void underneath where it just slowly over time washes away a whole bunch of water, and then eventually the ground will start caving in.
Well, like the guy said, I think it might have something to do with the cave system. But if you do a Google search on Kentucky sinkhole map, they're pretty much lined with it from Park City to Horse Cave. Looks like it kind of runs south and east of the Green River. So I don't know Kentucky real estate that very well, but apparently it's a thing. So I don't know if it's like a naturally forming kind of thing that just has inherent problems that were never really thought of in the days when they're just building, you know, shacks to bootleg gin in. I don't know.
So did they say that the museum like all fell in at once, or it just started?
You can see the video. The center of it fell in. So it's like this big dome kind of.
And it just happened at once. Like it just, wasn't
yeah,
like.
Yeah, they had security
like there was
cams.
Some give, and then it.
You can see the cars kind of shift a little bit, and then shift a little bit more, and then crunch. And the pictures, they look like toys. It looks like one of my fake miniature. It looks like little toy cars.
Tilt
all,
shift. There
yeah.
You go.
It's. I mean, I looked at the picture. Somebody said, this looks fake. And I was like, yeah, that's fake. It's totally fake. No, it's not fake. Wow.
Yeah, they actually kind of look like the tilt shift thing where it's like just matchbox cars down
yeah.
in that.
They didn't even do any blurring or anything. It's just because of the scale of how deep the hole is and this down look on it, and the cars are laid over on their sides. There's not a lot of damage to the cars that I could see on top, you know, because they're kind of on top of the rubble. There is one car that's partially buried, but...
So have you seen the video of the quadcopter going
Yeah, in? They sent a quadcopter down in there to kind of look around. It's very interesting. So
how many cars fell in?
So they better hurry up and get the rest of them out, huh?
I think it was eight of them.
Yeah, six or eight.
Enough. Probably, you know, a couple of million dollars. I mean, it's just startling.
Six privately held and then two that were on loan from General Motors.
Wow.
Ooh, somebody made the mistake of storing their Corvette there. Here's the waiver you signed, by the way. I know you didn't read the fine print about sinkholes. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air.
Yeah. The museum has hired the guy from Animal House. You screwed up. You trusted us. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll park the cars in the alley, and we'll all say, or we'll hide. We'll take care of the car, and we'll just tell your brother. We'll tell General Motors that we parked them out in the alley, and well, we didn't realize, and they all got stolen. Insurance buys a new car. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. If you Google search sinkhole Corvette Museum, you'll find all kinds of information.
Apparently, the part that's really weird with it is that since it's indoor, it's called a cover collapse sinkhole is the usual type. This is from an article. But the thing that's usually it's from like rainwater and
erosion,
erosion from ice and snow, which since it's in the whole thing is indoors. It's kind of odd. This may have just been something that's been a ticking time bomb since they built the building.
We were saying also a lot of it's from groundwater pumping will mess it up, and then construction and development practices too. So someone could have been doing something even in the area and messed up
fracking,
drainage.
That's what it was. It was fracking. I don't know. It's God. They had a 1993 one spider and 1962. Oh. 1984 pace car. Good Lord.
Well, yeah, the museum is, especially a Corvette museum, it's not like they're going to have lame ones.
And it's not like they're made out of sturdy sinkhole proof material. It's like maybe they fell lighter because they're fiberglass and they didn't smash up. It's weird how intact the cars look down in the sinkhole.
Wow.
All right, 713-526.
Yes, if it was the 1950s automobile museum. Sorry. If it was the 1950s automobile museum, they just would have put stairs down there and the cars would still be intact.
I wonder if it's true with that rumor that they might just cover the whole thing. And I can't believe they're going to let them stay there. I can't believe that they would let the building remain. I wouldn't keep my car there.
Take them out and restore them, because if they're that valuable and important.
Yeah, but you're talking bent frames and ugh, I can only imagine. Groovehouse.
Yes.
See, we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who is it and what do they want?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Jordan.
Jordan, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I've got a question about a Windows 98. Hey, I'm on the air right now. Sorry. I'm picking up my mother from the airport.
Out of the car, Mom.
Welcome home, Mom.
Okay, so I work at a dry cleaners. And we're running a Windows 98 platform. And there's this really important program that we need. It's got all the customer details on it. And I need this program really bad so we can move it to a business model of an XP. Given the 98 that we're running is on a network, there's a parent computer and then three other computers. Now, there's no drivers for the USB port. I tried using a flash drive. Didn't work. No drivers. No CD drive, nothing. Like, I can't access it at all. I tried using my laptop.
Wait a second. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to copy the program itself?
Yeah. I just need the program. That's it.
Are you sure that the program will run without actually being installed? Because typically you can't move an installed application from one computer to another and just have it work.
Gotcha. Because
you have to find the install media that actually goes through and makes all the changes to the system, like registry edits and whatever, when it installs the program. Because it might drop DLL or other driver files into the Windows directory, and they all the files wouldn't just be contained necessarily be contained neatly in the application directory.
Gotcha.
So just copying the program over to another computer does not have a very high chance of actually working.
It won't necessarily work. All right.
So what you're going to want to do, and even then, I don't even know if the program will work on XP if it's designed for Windows 98.
Mm-hmm.
You may have to do something like set up a virtual box with 98 if that would work at all, too, if you could be able to access it.
What does the software do?
It handles pickups, drop-offs, history lookup for all of our customers.
Have you researched any upgraded versions of that software?
I'm sorry, my mother's talking to me. Say it again.
Hush now, Mom. Be quiet for a second. We got work to do here.
Right?
Have you looked into the manufacturer of the software to see if they have an updated version that might be designed for Windows maybe 7 or XP or something?
Well, the program was written specifically for us back in like 95.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was a handwritten, one-of-a-kind piece of software.
Fairly certain that's the case.
That's unfortunate.
I'm guessing
that
the
really original sounds like you need to have somebody write a new piece of software.
Or see if there's an industry piece of software that might be able to import
it. Would
your
it
data.
Be possible to P2V it and then run it on a virtual on a newer system?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he was talking about is, you know, if he could get the install media of the software and he could...
Well, but if he can actually
clone,
P2V the actual system...
Oh, the whole system.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The whole system. Virtual, make a virtual of the entire system.
It's on a computer that apparently doesn't have a disk drive, doesn't have USB.
It's got to have a disk drive, though, right?
Well, it does, but there's no drivers for any of it.
No drivers, yeah, because it's got a hard disk in there.
Well, so this is a desktop. You could, you know, I guess at night when nobody's using it, you could take the drive out, put it in like, put a USB adapter on the actual hard drive, copy stuff off, and then put it back if they need to.
Yeah, if there's some, I don't even know which software, if there's anything that would virtualize a Windows 98 instance.
Y'all said VirtualBox earlier. Is that what y'all were talking about?
Yeah, well, see, there's the option to run any OS, any operating system as a guest operating system, you know, on a host machine. So you could have a brand new Windows 7, Windows 8 computer, run VirtualBox and basically run a virtual computer on
run
that.
Yeah, that computer inside of a window of the Windows 7 machine.
Right.
But you would have to be able to, and there definitely is software that will virtualize physical machines, but I'm not sure if it's, like the stuff I usually see is usually in an enterprise setting. I don't know if anybody makes one that just general users have access to or not.
Well, VMware will let you take and virtualize a machine, grab all the software, and basically port that over into a VM. But
is that software available to just general end users?
Yeah.
Then they might be human.
It's not free, but yeah. Mm. But I've just never even thought about trying to virtualize. You know, virtualized. Actually, I have thought about virtualizing. I virtualized Windows 95.
Didn't you virtualize Windows 3.1?
I did.
So VMware does not support virtualizing Windows 98, for sure. So that's one of them that's out, one of the big ones. Is the original developer not around? Do you guys have any kind of record of who wrote the program?
He died of old age, right?
Yeah.
No Tiki, no software.
Contact information, so yeah, I could probably get in contact with him.
Well, have you researched? I mean, the software itself just takes care of keeping track of the customer information and what they've dropped off and what work they're going to have done and whether they've picked it up, right?
Yes.
There's got to be something like that out there that's, you know, more commercial and more...
But the deal is it's got all his customer information already.
Yeah, exactly.
And so
he needs to export it.
It's got to be a if it was written for him by a friend, I would imagine it's probably written
a text on like a black screen, or does it look kind of like windowy? You know,
it's like CMYK kind of.
Okay.
Like it's really, really old school looking, but not green and black.
Does it? It's okay, but it looks like it's kind of running in almost like a DOS window, and you've got like the chunky stuff, and the cursor moves kind of chunky like that.
Yeah, there's no cursor. It's all keystroke.
It's all keystrokes, so no mouse cursor.
Yeah, but I mean...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's text-based.
Yeah, they probably wrote it in something old. It's not. Doesn't sound like Visual Basic, does it? It sounds like maybe like a small talk or who knows from back then. But get a hold of them and see what you can do. Really, what you want to be able to do is give it the data.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any way to export what's in there, that, you know, to some kind
of... Yeah, if you can find how the data is stored, then you can... try to see if there's a way to export it and reformat it to something else.
On Windows 98, probably what he's got, there are ODBC connections. I think if you go in like to the system, and then you can go look at, it's called a data source named DSN or something like that. But usually when we used to write programs for Windows 98, you have to, and you want to hook into a local database, you have an ODBC connection, and that actually shows up in the system. So if you go digging through there, you know, looking for some kind of a DNS, you can maybe find where DSN. The data is stored. DSN, sorry, I knew I was getting that wrong. It's been a long time. Yeah.
But even a long time. You know, I mean, granted, I mean, even if you get the hard drive taken out of the computer, hook up to another computer, move all the data over, you're probably still going to need somebody to look at the whole thing and either virtualize it if it's possible. Mm-hmm. Or come up with a new software that you can use to run.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can get your data out, if it's in some kind of a database that you can get to it, then you can take your data and move into, like, some other kind of, you know, like, CRM system. That's really all it is. It's, like, it's client relation management that's, you know, for cleaners. But you just need tracking stuff. I'm sure there's stuff out there. There may even be cloud-based stuff out there.
The unfortunate part is because this is a custom piece of software and we don't know all the details on it.
Definitely.
You're not looking at finding some, you know, like if you have one kind of database program and you wanted to import data from another database program, if it's, you know, a relatively common database program, then there are tools that allow you to do that. Say, I'm going to import data from this database to the other, but because this is custom, don't even know how everything's going to be mapped out or if it's going to be any standard data maps.
There are a lot of really cheap, I'm looking, and there's like a lot of really cheap, like dry cleaner point of sale systems out there. There's like one system that's been around for 25 years. They've been doing stuff. And I would think that these being professional systems would be like, you know, like four figures, but they're not. They're like cheaper than a computer.
Wow.
You might want to go check. I mean, I don't want to drop these. One of them is Vivaldi systems or, you know, talk to them. I know that they've got, they may have professional services that a lot of these companies for like a little bit more may have like a migration path, or they may even have like, you know, a consultant that might cost you like $80 an hour, $100 an hour, but someone that can actually get the data, get it over into the new system, get it set up and get you going.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. I got tasked with this by the manager. I mean, I've only been there for about 2 months. And as soon as I started working there, he's like, "Hey, you know how to use computers, right?" That's my application, unfortunately. So I've been tasked with this.
It's just a bad idea because you're getting off. Yes, you're getting off Windows 98, and that's good. But you're getting onto another platform that's slated for death in like a month and a half. So
yeah,
you really want to jump to Windows 7, jump to Windows 8, get something new, and get something with support where you guys never have to worry about it again.
Mm-hmm. So that was my second question. Should I not suggest to my manager a Windows-based XP program, XP platform rather?
I wouldn't do XP.
I'd do Windows 7 at the very least.
Do you have a laptop or do you have a machine? Do you have like a Windows
He's in a
machine?
Car.
No, not right now.
Oh, okay.
In general.
Yeah, I've got a XP laptop.
Okay, a couple of them I'm looking at. Go check out Vivaldi Systems. You can actually download the demo. And probably the best way to make a sale to, you know, to a manager, to anyone really, is not go, you know, talk about all the merits of the system. Actually see if it works and then go show them. Say like, hey, look what this does. We couldn't do this before. Look what this does. We couldn't do this before.
Mm-hmm.
Get them sold on it. Or her sold on it, and then drop the price. But, actually show them something first.
Gotcha.
Because you just say, hey, I need, you know, $400 for blah, blah, blah. It's one thing, but if you really get them sold on this, and they can say, okay, this is awesome, and by the way, it's only, you know, $300-$400, then you might go for it.
Yeah, he's really gung-ho about it. So, I mean, I'm sure money wouldn't be a problem right now.
It's time to come into the 20th century.
And then then you'll become the hero?
And yeah, hopefully. I need a raise.
Just
get a raise.
Director of IT is this position you want to work for, and then all you have to do is just sit there and make sure that one machine does not go down. That's a pretty comfy IT spot. Go for it.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. I've got a furious notes all over a postcard.
All right. Welcome back, Mom.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Wow. That's, you know, I see that all the time with small businesses, you know, that have these custom kind of software solutions. And the cool thing is they tend to run and run and run and run forever. They're real simple. They're real basic. They're not terribly complicated. If the hardware holds up, they'll keep working.
But it uses like Morpheus for the database backend.
Yeah, I've seen people just like create their own local storage, like flat files, and come up with their own ways of storing stuff. I mean, he could be in for a nightmare, but hopefully it's something easy.
All right, 713-526-5738 as we approach the top of the first hour this evening. We got a little bit of time left before we have to take a station break. So if you want to call and be on the air, now is your opportunity. All the lines are open. 713-526-KPFT. And Groovehouse, I mean, we will answer your call.
There you go.
Ah, yes.
And then we'll try to answer it.
We'll do our best. 713-526-5738 is the number to call.
Yes, we'll do our best, but if Jay gets it wrong, we'll blame him.
Yeah. It's like you had all the Corvettes.
If we get
it
wrong, Jay will apologize.
All right, so I don't know what else to say. We got all the lines are open. Looks like a call might be coming in right now. Hooray! Save us from ourselves. 713-526-KPFT. You know, old databases. That's
the connection's a little up and down, but I'm sure you were saying something along these lines. But yeah, with a business, as time goes on, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing. Except watch as time goes by, because if it keeps working and you see new generations of operating system software come around, that's the time to, alongside the operating, the working system, to get the next thing working, going, instead of waiting all the way until it's about to die and then desperately trying to fix it.
All right, looks like Groovehouse has got a call screen ready to go, but he's also taking a second call, so he's hopping around like mad. We're hopping around like mad, trying to get these calls ready to go.
Hot potato.
I'm working really hard right now.
I'm winded.
Oh, well, here's a bit of news, a couple little bits of news to fill the time.
We actually got calls.
One call.
These are quickies. Sid Caesar's died, and so did the Chinese lunar rover.
There's a joke in there somewhere.
These things come in three.
The Chinese lunar rover, did it actually make it to the moon?
It made it.
Did it burn into the moon?
But now it's lost. Apparently it will not ask for directions, and now they don't know where it is.
All right. Groovehouse, who do we have?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Thomas.
Thomas, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thank you. It's just that my laptop screen went black, and the upper right, left side appears NPL drive, and it won't boot up again.
Yeah, you've got it.
It burned.
I'm sorry?
Did it crash? Did the whole...
Well, when I see that kind of thing, it tells me that the hard drive is probably going out. Your software has become corrupted. It can't find the operating system file, so it's partially booting, but then getting to a file it needs to continue, and it's not finding it. So chances are your hard drive is dead. How old is the laptop?
It's about 3 years old. It's a Dell. Yeah.
Well, you could try to use your recovery disks and reload the system.
But it came only with about 5 different disks, but Windows and so on. And
yeah.
So I put in what they told me to do, and it copies the I386, you know, backslash, and all those orders I gave it. It came back, but then once it's turned off, it doesn't come back. That sign comes back in.
Yeah, it sounded like you probably have a hard drive failure. You might want to have somebody take a look at it. The laptop's not that old, and it's not terribly expensive to replace a hard drive. What part of town are you in?
In the northwest.
Northwest.
Houston. Yeah.
Look up a company called Computer Hospital. They're real good about that kind of stuff, but you could also probably take it to someplace like Fry's or Micro Center as well.
I took it to Staples or one of the Office Max.
Yeah.
And the manager said, forget it. It's crashed. And it's not worth even trying to recover it.
I get recovering the data, but would they not put in a new drive? That's what you need right now. You just need a good drive.
Well, I guess, you know, you could buy a new laptop that's better than that one for less than $500. It's going to cost you a couple hundred dollars to put a new drive in it. So you have to make a decision there.
Yeah. Where's the recovery disk? Do you have to buy it? Or
no, you should have had those or made those when you first bought the computer. You should have been taken through the process. But if you didn't, go ahead.
Sorry. It doesn't show because I put in all the whatever they gave me, the Windows. I tried one by one.
Now, you booted it. You put the CD in the drive, and you tried starting the computer. And does it boot up and come to a screen?
I press F12, and then it gives me several options. It says boot from the disk.
Yeah.
And then it comes up, and then I have to give in a command. Like a C, a copy C, a backslash.
No. What should happen is if you have a Windows disk, if you press F12 to get the selective boot, you'll have the option to boot from CD.
Yes, correct.
That's it should boot from that CD and take you through the process of installing Windows. Basically, a handful of menus that says, do you want to install? Yes, no, click here. But you're not seeing that?
No, that's what I see is the steps that they...
Well, if you took it to if you took it to a shop and they said that the drive is shot, then the drive is probably shot, or at least there is a physical problem with the computer that needs to be fixed before any of this is going to work.
Yeah.
So you have to make a decision on that. But I don't know that Office Max or one of those places like Staples is where I'd take a computer to have it checked out. I'd take it to a place that specializes in computers.
Okay, the one you said, right?
Like Micro Center or Fry's. And there's a place in the northwest, maybe. There's a place called Computer Hospital. They have an office down here in downtown. They also have an office somewhere in the north side, Computer Hospital. But I would try one of those places, or even a Best Buy to have them just see what it would take to put a new hard drive and install an operating system on it.
Okay, very well.
I'm sorry we couldn't be more help.
No, that's right. Thank you very much anyway.
All right, thank you for your call. Have a good night. Thanks.
Good night.
All right. 713-526-5738. We are approaching the top of the hour. Does any of these calls seem like they would be fast? We only got about 3.5 minutes before the... Actually, I only have about 1.5 minutes before the break. What am I talking about? I'm crazy. I don't know. We're crazy.
We're slashing answers tonight.
We don't know what we're doing.
But if you are on hold...
If you're on hold...
Hang tight.
Hold...
Steady.
On... To what you've got. We'll be back in the second hour slot.
Don't stop believing.
Don't stop believing. All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. Bloop. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Inflicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Groovehouse.
Groovehouse. Yes, we are.
You're Groovehouse. We're all
Groovehouse.
Cuckoo, ca-choo. We'll be right back after these station messages.
You're the Eggman.
Drive may be a distant memory, but KPFT's needs are ever present. If you pledged during the recent membership campaign, thank you. Your donation form and envelope should be in that stack of mail. Please don't forget to pay your pledge. And if you didn't get a chance to support KPFT during the last marathon, now is the time to help. KPFT racks up many costs. Your support is needed, even when there is no fund drive. Please visit kpft.org to make a secure online contribution. You can even become a sustainer and give a little each month to support KPFT. Again, that's kpft.org to support this station. This is KPFT Houston. Thank you.
Greetings, this is KPFT General Manager Dwayne Bradley, asking you to include KPFT in your estate planning. Supporting KPFT with a legacy gift is an easy decision to make. The future growth and excellence of our station depends on our ability to build a permanent base of support through an active and successful legacy gift program. The next time you meet with your advisors to review your long-term financial plans, please remember to include KPFT. Ensure your commitment to public broadcasting with the help of your attorney. A bequest is a very simple thing to put into place. If you need help or have questions, questions, call our development director at 713-526-4000. That's 713-526-4000, extension 315. You can help to ensure that the independent voice of KPFT will be preserved for generations to come. Please name KPFT as a beneficiary in your will today. This is KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Barrett, time fell into a sinkhole. That's all. I fell into a swallet, actually.
A swallet?
Or a Dolene. It could have fallen into a Dolene.
DeLorean?
No, a D-O-L-I-N-E, Dolene. Or a shakehole, as they're also known. These are all synonyms for sinkholes.
And that's your Barrett time.
That's your Barrett time. It did fall into a sinkhole on the way over, though. That's totally, completely, almost the truth.
Did it remember KPFT in its will?
If I fall into a sinkhole, everything goes to KPFT.
I had a sinking feeling he was going to say something like that.
You need to watch out for...
We tell bad jokes.
You need to watch out for Ernesto walking around behind you with a water hose.
Ooh,
trying to make a sinkhole.
They're also called swallow holes.
Sink or swallow.
Yes.
All right, so we're back to the show. It's the second hour of Technology Bites, and we're going to continue taking phone calls. So if you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I see we have two calls in the queue, and we will now deliver one of these calls.
All right, then. Up next on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with Randall.
Randall, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Do y'all know anywhere I could find those, remember them little widgets that come with, like, Windows Vista and 7, like the little clock and the CPU meter and all that stuff? Microsoft discontinued those, didn't they?
They did because they were huge, huge security risks. Like, they were bad. So, yeah, they actually
pulled them.
Did
they connect to the Internet or something?
I think the main thing, yeah, they connected to the Internet. And I think that they were running, like, if not Flash, something very easily manipulated.
Yeah.
And they had access to just about everything. So, the cool thing is
with Windows 8, like, the tiles are kind of like widgets now. You can have a clock. And that kind of, so what are you missing? You want some kind of weather thing to tell you that it's going to rain?
Well, what it is the computer screen is so bland looking without those things. You know, that I used to...
I always thought they were cluttered.
You know, would tell me what was going on, the hard disk space and all that. Okay, what it is, I got an old computer from 2004 with an MSI motherboard.
What operating system, real quick? Sorry.
Well, I'm running XP on it, but I found something from Crystal XP that manipulates it. It's called 7 to Inspiron. When it boots up, it makes it look like Windows 7, the sounds and all that stuff. And there used to be a place on Crystal XP, you know, where you could download them little widgets, but they discontinued them there, too. It's like when Microsoft discontinued them, everybody cut them off.
It's like Flappy Bird.
Huh? Yeah. Now, I just wanted to know if y'all knew any place I could get those things, like a website I could download the widgets or something.
I find the widgets to be cluttered, and I mean, if you're not using your computer for like browsing the web or sending and receiving email or playing games, it's just sitting there, and you want a bunch of widgets on it. Who am I to argue? 8 Gadget Pack has a set of widgets that you can install on a Windows computer. It's the numeral 8 Gadget Pack and Gadgetarian and Gadgets versus Live Tiles. There's a website I just did a Google search on widgets Windows 8, and you can find a number of third-party widget builders.
I tried putting Windows 8 on this computer, and it did not like it.
But just Google search. What is it? You say it's running Vista or 7
XP.
Or what?
Well, it's running XP, but it just looks like Windows 7. And, you know, it's just a little manipulation program. But when I go to CC Cleaner, it still says it's XP Pro. But it ran those widgets just fine until I reinstalled the operating system. I rebuilt everything in it.
Yeah.
And when I went back to find those widgets, nobody had them anymore. They were just gone.
Yeah, good riddance, I say. But
well, I only used like 3 of them, and it really didn't pull much from my computer. I'd never really seen a problem. But
what do you do on your computer? Just mainly, I mean, do you have like a lot of custom applications?
The web, but you know, I rip all my CDs to it and stuff like that, which I'm still in the process of doing. But
well, there's Yahoo widgets. Yahoo makes widgets. So
I've got those on there, but to me, they're just kind of bland looking compared to, you know, what the other ones were. But...
fractal generators. Yeah, right.
Just for giggles, if you want to, there are a lot of Linux bootable CDs where if you just want to try it out, I know it's not XP. But they've got like all kinds of widgets. They've got widgets that'll like, you know, like googly eyes that'll follow your mouse pointer all the way around. They've got timers. They've got phases of the moon. I mean, they're guys that all they do is like write widgets.
And you can actually really creative. Get a four-year-old and have them bring all their stickers, and they can put them all over the
permanent widgets
of your computer.
You ever heard of a program called WinStep Extreme?
No.
It's basically a. It manipulates your operating system, so you know where you can put like a little rocket dock up top, and it'll have little waves and stuff floating through it. You got to pay like $40 for the program, but man, it slows your computer down something hardcore. So I took it off.
Yeah, that's why I'm suggesting Linux. Linux on a machine that would run XP would be awesome. You might just want to dip your toes in the water just to see.
Yeah,
you know, you've got to ask yourself how much are you willing to suffer for your widgets.
Yeah,
and
right.
If you're really a widget man, you might want to look at Linux.
Yeah. What was that site you was telling me about for those? It was eight widget or eight. What was it?
It was called, let's see, I just Google searched Windows 8 widgets, and there's a site, there's a 8 gadget pack for Windows 8.
Oh, it's for Windows 8?
Yeah, you're saying you can't run.
No, you've got XP, so we moved on from that. But if you Google search widgets, Windows XP, you'll find stuff. There's stuff out there.
Okay. All righty.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Good luck.
All right. Thank you, guys.
I do not get widgets. I've always hated
them. I never really liked them. They always seem too...
I mean, you know, I guess if you just want to have a computer screen that you don't do anything with, that's just filled up with data.
I felt like they were intrusive. Like,
I did, too.
I like the way Apple does it, where you hit a hotkey. Well, now it's a separate screen, mm-hmm. but it used to be you hit a hotkey, and they would show up, and then you hit it, and they go away.
I like that a lot better.
That was pretty cool, because it's like having stuff pop up that you're interested in, but it's not there all the time, where it's just... Drawing attention and taking up space.
Just having the desktop filled up with clutter. I mean, I've met some people that are much more minimalist than I am. I mean, people would like, they don't even want a recycle bin on their desktop. They're just like, I want a completely blank desktop because I'm using the computer to do certain things. So if I'm going to use a web browser, I'm going to use a web browser. If I'm going to use my email, I use my email. But trying to think if there was any kind of like web interface where you could like build gadgets into a web page or something, like with weather reports and CPU monitoring and that kind of
like Yahoo portal or those old school web portals. You do that. Google, you can do some stuff with Google.
Google Apps has a home site page that you can put custom stuff in.
Yeah, I think it'd be more along the lines of setting up something with different RSS feeds and having different news aggregates coming in. But
I wish you hadn't said Windows 8 was just gadgets and widgets, because that might have just ruined it for me. I'm looking at a Windows 8 screen, and all I see now are just widgets hanging out on the main screen.
Yeah, well, all those tiles, you can get where you update. You'll get like one tile will show you updates to your Facebook coming in, and your Facebook feed. Another one will show you your Twitter feed and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Mm.
But also, well, look at it and think of it as just more of an exploded start menu.
Yeah.
But it's an interactive widgety start menu. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air tonight. We've got one call in the queue and all the rest of the lines are open. Let us know what you're thinking or what you got for us. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next in the show, we're going to speak with Bruce.
Bruce, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, that's just what I need is waves floating through my stuff. Hey, I've got an AT&T 5 gigs for $50 thing, and I'm trying to figure out how to minimize my usage on it and just trying to educate myself as to what is drawing down my data when I'm connected.
Are you connecting from a mobile, like a laptop, or are you connecting from a desktop, or what do you have tethered off the hotspot?
I've got this hotspot, and I'm connecting my laptop off it via Wi-Fi.
And what are you doing with it? I mean, the biggest consumer of bandwidth is going to be if you do any kind of streaming of videos or anything like that. That will eat up 5 gigs
audio.
Pretty quickly.
Video, definitely.
Audio, a little bit. The one thing you can do is most of them, for instance, if you go to YouTube, you can actually ratchet down the quality. So, for instance, like HD might be 720p.
Let's find out what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not doing videos. I don't do movies. I just do, email and stuff like that. And I'm wondering,
how much data are you
still
using?
Drawing data while I'm connected, or do I have to be actively manipulating things for it to be drawing data?
Well, if you have your email client open, for example, it will refresh and pull down new mail, so that will consume data, but not a lot.
Windows will go and check for updates.
Windows checks for updates.
Antivirus. Definitions, if you have that installed.
Different things will try to update, but how much data are you measuring the data usage that you're using?
Oh, yeah. It tells me right here on my little hotspot, 1.95 gigabytes out of 5 gigs used.
How long have you had it?
This is a new one, but I've had this kind of
one point whatever used in what time frame?
I'm sorry, one more time?
How much, you say it's used 1.9 gigabytes, how long did it take into your billing cycle to use that?
It's a nominal of 1 month, and I have 15 days left.
So you're fine, yeah.
So you've used less than half of your allocation in half a month.
Yes, but my wife is here, and she's got an iPad, and very often I find that her iPad has connected to my hotspot, and it's burning all night long while everybody's sleeping and doing no telling what, and I presume that it's sucking up.
Why don't you turn the hotspot off?
My 5 gigabytes.
Why don't you turn the hotspot off at night?
That's an excellent idea.
Or turn the
iPad
off.
Well, I was going to say you could also go into the hotspot, and you could only allow connections by MAC address, and then you could only.
Can you do that on a mobile hotspot like that, though?
Yeah, you can.
I did that earlier today. I can block her access.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Why are you using a $50 a month hotspot as opposed to, say, using DSL or cable?
I'm out in the country, Waller County. I don't have access to DSL. The reason I've done it this way is so I can... My eyes are bad. I'm an old white guy. My eyes are bad, and I need to see it on a computer screen as opposed to some smartphone-type arrangement. And I have a general...
Well, that's regardless. I mean, I was just asking about how you're getting your data. You're getting your data through this Wi-Fi hotspot. I was wondering why you weren't using cable access or using DSL.
Because you're remote.
Not available.
Yeah.
Cables won't reach Waller.
Well, so far...
Only the rich part, of which there are none.
Well, the things that consume bandwidth are if you watch YouTube videos, if you're streaming music, if you're going to websites that have very large images on them.
A lot of app updates over the iPad, possibly, if your wife has a lot of apps installed.
Yeah, she's doing...
So if you have automatic updates enabled, it's going to be... You're connected, it's going to...
And if she has a lot of apps installed or a lot of those are getting updated in real time, that's going to pull down data.
So has she been using the bandwidth at all the last 15 days, or has it just been you on the hotspot?
That's what I can tell. Heretofore, it's been, I seem to have been sucking up a pretty good amount of data.
Hey, Jake, can't you go into an iPad and actually see data usage, like see how much you've used and reset that? Is there a way to do that?
I don't know about that. I think you can see.
Or Android, you can do that. Like, I can go and say, like, hey, reset my data usage, and it'll track, like, how much all the apps used.
I think you can
used.
Do that in iPhones and iPads.
You can get data usage applications for the iPad, too, that tell you how much data you're using.
And that'd be the best way is, go see if there's something free or see what you can do, but get something that tracks the actual bandwidth, and then you can run it for, a week or so, and then go in there and see what the biggest users of the bandwidth is, what the biggest offenders is, and you can, come up with a strategy once you see what's actually using the bandwidth.
What happens? Who provides the hotspot? Where does it come from?
Oh, this is your friends at AT&T.
He's got a Netgear one. What are the new Netgear? This is the one I had to get a couple weeks ago for my.
How much do they?
Netgear Air Card, yep. 770 or something.
So,
like that.
So you're paying $50 a month for 5 gigs of data.
That's right.
On
it's $10 a gig, and if you go over 5 gigs, it's $10 a gig. So if you do 5.1, it's another $10.
Right. So if you exceed, your limit, you get. You have to pay by the gig, $10 a gig. So if you're
$10, yep.
That's not that bad, really. I mean, if you
it's really not. But I went to the Best Buy folks and told them what I had, and their best offer from Verizon was 10 gigs for $90, and then I think the AT&T was 10 gigs for $80, and I just don't usually use 10 gigs. I use, you know, 6 or 7.
Does Sprint cover you out there?
That's an excellent question. I don't know. T-Mobile does not.
I know Sprint and T-Mobile offer unlimited, but I don't know if they offer it on a hotspot.
I don't think they do on the hotspots. No? Because I ran to every hotspot dealer in town like about 2 weeks ago and had multiples in my hand at one point. We went with the AT&T one. But, yeah, none of them had unlimited.
Yeah, but the T-Mobile folks have failed twice out here, so not very high on them. And the AT&T deal, it's month to month, and you get sick of it, you go down the road and do something else, find a better deal.
Yeah, you might also want to look into one of the satellite providers.
HughesNet is one of the ones that I know is out.
I know they have some, they don't have as restrictive a data caps. They do have data caps, but Hughes, I mean, anywhere you've got, you know, where you can see the sky in the Western Hemisphere, you could use satellite. So I know, like, Hughes offers satellite internet access, and Dish offers satellite internet access. You might want to look at one of those.
Is it going to be down in the $50 or $60 a month range?
I haven't priced it in a while, but it wouldn't hurt to go look to see what they deliver. Let's see if H-U-G-H-E-S. Hughes Broadband Satellite Services. If I look at Hughes.com, not finding where you can order this stuff. Solutions.
Plan pricing. It starts out at $39 bucks. Per month.
For how much?
5 gigs.
Okay.
Actually, monthly total of, so any, yeah, 5 gigs of any time, 5 gigs of after hours, totaling up to 10 gigs, and it's 5 megs down, 1 meg up for the basic. And then they go from there. You can go all the way up to, you can spend $100 if you want to.
But yeah, so like $40 a month, you get five gigs during prime time and 5 gigs after hours, so when you're burning the midnight oil, that stuff.
It looks like they made some improvements. This stuff used to be fairly slow, where it'd definitely be like a last ditch. You know, this is all I can get. I'm going to do HughesNet. But they're doing more, it's, you know, quote unquote, Gen 4. So it looks like these speeds are kind of on par with what you might be getting with your Netgear device from AT&T.
And I was just going to say, going back in the conversation a little bit, if you're curious about the iPad usage, Adam's Apple on IRC said that if you go into
iOS settings and then cellular,
and scroll to the bottom, it'll actually show you data usage per app.
Application.
So it might give you an idea of what app is pulling that data, if it's actually the iPad that's doing it.
Yeah, that's probably just my imagination.
All right, well, there's some ideas for you. I wish you luck.
That's pretty good. Unfortunately, I've made the decision to buy the hotspot from the AT&T folks. So I'm gonna run it a while till the battery gives out, which probably won't be very long.
Yeah, don't run it all the way down, and if you do, plug it right back in. We've lost a lot of them just because they're LiPo batteries, and if they discharge too much, they just don't come back.
Is it better to just keep it plugged in all the time?
If
you're not traveling around with it and need a reliable battery, yeah, just keep it plugged in.
Oh, that's high-quality advice, sir. Look, you guys have a great show. Thanks
all
a lot.
Right, thanks for your call. Good night.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, yeah, well, they will only show the what they were talking about on the iPad and stuff will only show you the cellular connection.
Well,
on
cellular, it's not Wi-Fi.
If it's a cellular Wi-Fi. iPad. Now, but if there are apps that will measure how much data you're pushing over the Wi-Fi as well as the cellular. David Brummel showed me one that he had a long time ago so you could track his data usage.
I think I've got one that I downloaded that, because I wanted to do a speed test and do like tower locator and tower signal strength and stuff. And I think that one shows the amount of bandwidth used, but that's going to be cellular. It's not going to be Wi-Fi.
All right.
Android does Wi-Fi. Sorry.
713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us, we've got one call in the queue. Plenty of open lines. 713-526-KPFT. Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, man, I haven't been around for a while. I don't know if you guys had any discussion about the NSA, but this month there's two magazines that have some awesome articles about what's really going on in the NSA. And I mean, really, really awesome. One of them is Wired, that gives some solutions. And the other one is Popular Mechanics, that tells the full extent as to, you know, what their involvement is. And what the article really turns out to be is something that says the NSA is the least of our worries compared to Microsoft, Google, and Yahoo.
Is this the How the NSA Almost Killed the Internet article?
Yeah.
I just read that last night. No, actually, I didn't finish it. I'm halfway through it. I was reading it last night.
It's awesome. It is totally awesome. What it spelled out is something that I kind of suspected. What it says is that every app that you have on your phone has access to your data. Every app that you have on your telephone has access to your data.
Yep.
Almost all of the
Flappy Birds has access to your data.
All of the major providers have a EULA that sums up to be, if you use their applications for any of their services, as it's worded, you give them complete license to do whatever they want to, whatever you put on their services, even though you still own it, but you hold them totally harmless from any, not just them, but also their affiliates.
Yeah, all the licensing is pretty standard, and you may not even own the hardware.
The licensing tends to be anything. I mean, they're trying to protect themselves, but it also, because they're protecting themselves, it also gives them a lot of leeway to stuff that they could do that all companies say, well, we're not going to do anything like that. This is just what our lawyers say we need in order to be able to protect ourselves from getting sued over something else. But because of the way it's worded, it would be possible legally for them to do it and not get in trouble.
Now, not to add fuel to the conspiracy theory fire, but there's a pretty good article out there. Go Google for "The Internet is Broken, Act Accordingly." It's kind of the same thing. So it's like, you can say, well, the NSA is doing this. So yeah, well, Google's doing this. So yeah, these guys are doing that. Really what it comes down to is the whole nothing's secure. You can't really trust anything. Even things that they've said in the past, hey, you can trust this. You really can't trust anything. The guy that actually wrote the article says that at any given time, he assumes that no less than three different countries are in his computer watching his motions, watching what he's doing, looking at his communications. So that's just kind of where we are right now,
Yeah, and the NSA messaged me, and they said if you stay by your phone after you get off the air, they'll call you and talk about it.
They're coming over with refreshments.
They've got some Kool-Aid for you.
We got cookies.
They've got the number, so you don't have to worry about calling them.
The good news is that if you ever lose your phone and you need all your contacts back, they could probably offer a service to where they
restore your data. And restore even like your call history.
Yeah, right. So the last update I got on my Apple, Firefox. The last update I got on my Firefox, Gmail is what it was. There were some files that I had deleted from 2010 ended up back in my Gmail account. I deleted them way back in 2010. And the last upgrade I got, they were back in there again. But they were in this file that's in the Gmail that's called important, one that Gmail created for you. And anything that they put in that file is important to them because it could be something that you have in your start file or something you have in your personal file. And if you delete it out of the important file, it's also deleted out of your start and your personal file, which means that it has to stay an important file. Hear about that one?
No.
Yeah. That, if you go to Gmail right now, you'll see a file on there right now that says important. And if you have a Gmail account and you look in that file, and you'll see that Gmail has taken upon itself, Google has taken upon itself to create this file and put what they deem important in it, and you can't do anything about it. I went to Google it, and there's a forum about it, There's a lot of talk about it. What it seems to me is that that same little cloud-like thing that they put in for your pictures and everything on your Gmail account.
Well, I mean, I know that, you know, that's the thing. These companies like, you know, Google is a data company. They are all about getting data. What they're going to do with it, how they're going to use it, who knows? I mean, you can speculate and speculate all you want. Now, if you are interested in protecting your data, if you feel that your data is so important and so, you know, private that you don't want anybody else to have it, you can do things about it. You can encrypt your data. There is encryption available to you. You can secure all of your messages. You can secure all of your data. All it requires is that you educate yourself and learn how to do it. And most people say, you know, that's a lot of work to do, and I'm just not going to hassle with it. I'm just going to hope for the best.
Yeah. Did you miss yesterday?
What happened yesterday?
Yesterday, February the 11th.
What?
2/11.
Protesting mass surveillance on the internet. The day we fight back.
Oops, I forgot to fight back. I worked all day.
The article in WAD gives you several different tips of things that they're very technical things. But the reason I wanted you guys to talk about it so that people would know that there are things they could do. Most people are not even aware of the things they'll be talking about. They just go to their computer and do all the surfing that they do. My main concern is, I mean, I'm a photographer, and there was a case where this woman, she wasn't even a photographer, but she had some pictures of her her daughter ended up in some advertisement that she saw. And that's when she found out about this EULA that Google had going on, and she hassled them enough that they took it off.
Yeah, I think Google started doing some stuff related to that, and Facebook started doing some stuff related to that, where if you like something, then they can use your photo to advertise it to your friends to say that you like it.
There's been a pushback on that. Zuckerberg supposedly is swinging, you know, the pendulum's swinging the other way. He's going to be a little bit more private about stuff. And on the Gmail thing, you can go in. You can train that important folder. As you mark certain things important, it'll start to do Bayesian filtering on it, and it'll start moving things that it learns are important to you into that folder.
It starts off generically,
for
assuming
everybody.
What it thinks might be important to you, and then, you can affect it by saying, this isn't important, this is important.
Right.
It's just like spam detection.
It's what they're trying to do, or what the purpose is that they're trying to make it easier for you to get to the data that's important to you. You know, certain emails are going to be more important than other emails. I think, you know, Google does a great job, for example, of filtering spam. I really like their mail service for that purpose.
Yeah.
But I also realize that anything that I put in my Gmail is probably there forever, even if I delete it. Google is just building storage warehouses just to get all the data. So you may delete it from your account. That doesn't mean Google doesn't have a copy of it somewhere. Your entire email archive is probably stored in a neat little folder with your name and social security number on it.
Hopefully marked important.
Well, that's kind of obvious. Those 2010 emails pop back up in my email account that I deleted, you know, 4 years ago. So it's kind of obvious that they store and stuff. You know,
well, it depends on how you deleted it, too. I mean, are you using a web-based interface to get to your mail, or do you use a client?
I just use Google right off my web-base, and I delete it, and then I delete it out of the trash.
Well, how'd you delete it out of the... So you went to your deleted items folder and emptied that as well?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I don't really know. I assume that everything that I do online is monitored and recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, if they're paying that much attention to me, they've got nothing else to do.
Ooh, exactly.
And they're bored out of their minds.
They're doing it to escapade it, though. That's the whole thing. Like I said, my only concern is, I've gotten up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go somewhere to take, you know, pictures or something, and I'd hate like hell to see that pop up and somebody's advertising. I don't get nothing for it. You know what I'm saying?
You probably, you know, if you've got any decent photos on the web, you'd probably be amazed at how many of them are probably already being used.
Well, not anymore. I haven't put one on the web in a long time.
Yeah, I've got dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of photos being used all over the world.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's some action you can
take. Without your permission.
Without my permission. That is correct.
I mean, get them off Facebook. Maybe what do you use?
I don't care. You know, I just deal with it the best I can. I you know, the idea of taking all of my photos and sticking them on a hard drive in my house where nobody can see them and I can't share them or have them enjoyed is not worth it. I'd rather have them out there and have people see them because, sure, a lot of my stuff gets misappropriated, but because I know how to go look for that and find it, I can either extract money for that, but also because I have my stuff online, people do come to me and offer to purchase stuff. So it's kind of a trade-off, you know. It belongs to the internet in a way, and I can wrestle with that as much or as little as I care to. But I've made more money off of my photography by having my photography online and visible to people, and that's the way that I choose to operate. And
let me ask you a question: if you had your own website, could you have a private email account to that website?
You can do that even without having a private website.
Yeah.
You can have a private email account, but I mean, I don't know how. What do you mean private? What are you trying to?
I mean one that doesn't have to go through Google or Yahoo.
Yeah.
Oh, you can have your own email server.
Yeah, you can have your own email server, but it kind of doesn't matter because all that email's going through routers and switches across the internet through the backbone, and so it's all being collected by the NSA.
If you want your email private, you need to encrypt it
for stuff. Look for stuff anyway.
Right. Yeah. Once you send an email, it goes, you know, through the mail server, through any number of routers.
Leaves copies behind.
Yeah, that have listening on them, that have data harvesting. I mean, that's why you don't send information in plain text that could compromise your identity. If you send your social security number in an email, it can be intercepted anywhere along the way through whichever router, switch, or hub, or whatever it goes through before it gets to its destination.
The best thing you can really do is to use PGP or GPG or something to actually encrypt your message before you send it an email. But, you know, that gets complicated because anybody you send it to has to have your public key in order to and the program to decrypt that message for them to be able to read it. And it's just too much effort.
And then
for a
once they have it decrypted on their system, it's subject to being compromised because their system is compromised.
Right.
Exactly.
Go
ahead.
Are you trying to hide information from the government or from other people,
No, it's just that I just have a bad feeling about anybody having to access to anything they want to of my personal information, especially my pictures. I love my pictures. You know, I've been taking pictures since 1955.
Well,
man.
Just shoot film and don't put anything online.
Yeah, that's the only solution. That's sad. It's sad that it has to come to that.
Well, it's
an invasion of privacy. Period.
Part of being connected in an online world, there are different paradigms. You know, you have to realize that in order to be connected and have all this ready access and have all of this convenience, it comes with trade-offs. And there are, the more you educate yourself, the more protected you can be. But, you know, there are out there in the world, and it's not, like you said, it's not even the NSA or even the Googles and the Microsofts of the world. There are people out there that their sole purpose in life is to get your data.
Yeah.
And there are people that, you know, will go and find, like, you know, I was just reading this article about there's an entire subculture of internet people whose only purpose in life is to find backdoors into private photography websites for people that do boudoir and adult photography.
Yeah.
So like if a friend of mine, Christine Tremulay, she's a boudoir photographer. She offers her services as a photographer to take pictures of people that are sexy and alluring and attractive that someone might want to have done as a present for their spouse or their significant other.
Mm-hmm.
And as a commercial photographer, she puts this stuff on her website behind, you know, a firewall that's password protected. So conceivably, the only person who could see these photos is the client. And that's a convenience for the client to be able to get the photos, review them, make the purchase and pay her and all of that. And conceivably, if it's done right, The only people that will ever see those photos are the person who took them and the person who purchased them. But there is an entire group of people out there that they find these websites and they find these paywalls, and they find a way to get past it to get to the data store and snarf all those photos and then distribute it amongst themselves. So wow. there are people out there that's all they want is your data, and they're very good at getting it. They're very skilled and very determined to keep after it. So, you know, you have to make a decision. You have to come up with whether or not you want to participate in the online community or you don't. If you do, then your data is subject to being misappropriated and hijacked in any number of ways. For me, the most important thing that I can do is protect my identity. The rest of the stuff is kind of like, you know, I'm going to deal with it as it comes. But the thing I do not want people to have is access to my bank accounts and to my social security number and that kind of stuff. I work as hard as I can to protect that. And I focus the lion's share of my privacy attention on that. And fortunately, thank goodness, the institutions that are responsible for that, for the most part, are very good in helping me protect that data. There are ways to, you know, they have fraud alerts and they have ways of making sure that it's me that's logging into my bank account online to use that. But the other stuff, you know, you have to either really, really educate yourself if you don't want it to get taken, or you just don't need, you just don't play. But the whole online community, and there's a whole group of people who believe that, from a philosophical standpoint, that once you put something on the internet, however you put it on the internet, it belongs to the internet. And they believe that. They firmly and they will adamantly and aggressively and they will say that, you know, it's your fault for putting it out there. You've got no one else to blame but yourself. Yeah. And regardless of whether you think that's right or not, that's what's happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of very divergent philosophical viewpoints involved in the internet, and it sounds somewhat silly, but it's actually true. A lot of the early development of the internet kind of came out of the hippie culture to some degree. I mean, a lot of the old Unix guys and stuff, like early on, like not the IBM types, but the, like, you know, early, they were kind of counterculture people because they weren't part of mainstream culture at the time. And so there's a piece of that kind of like hippie
information
should be free. And it's creating a new market model or a new, commercial model, because if you think about it, grocery stores and department stores and electronic outlet stores and all those places assume that they're going to be a certain amount of shrink or loss due to their wares being damaged by customers handling it or being stolen or being, you know,
going bad.
I mean, that's built into the business model. You say, so like when I think about my photography, there's a certain amount of shrink there. I mean, I'm going to put 100 photographs out there, 80% of them might get stolen, and then another 10% might get purchased, and another 10% might just get left alone. And there are people that will say, well, you should be glad that anybody even cares about your photography. The fact that somebody's willing to steal it must mean you're doing something right. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that people justify and rationalize the whole thing, but the reality is that if you put it out there, it's subject to being taken. But on the down, so I have to weigh that. I have to say, do I want people to see my work and appreciate it and have the opportunity to buy it? Or do I want to hide my light under a bushel and just like nobody can look at it at all? I've made more money and had greater fun sharing my creative efforts with the world. Yes, there are people that will take advantage of it.
You can just sit at home with your blinds down, sitting in front of your computer, looking at your photos.
This has really been very good for me because, you know, talking to you guys tonight about this has really opened my mind up a little bit more to the reality of what, you know, what's really going on out there. However, the Wired book, the Wired magazine, does have some really good security ideas in there. As a matter of fact, they mentioned the one that you mentioned about the encryption, but the one receivers have to have it too. That was mentioned in that Wired magazine, but I'm gonna really study that because they have several different things and really try to get more education about the mechanical part of protection of the data.
Well, you sound to me like, you know, you're probably in the around my age. You know, you're not a kid. You know,
no, right, exactly.
Growing up and all of this stuff. I mean, at this point, there's only so much damage they can do before it's time for me to move on. So I'm not gonna sweat it too much. If I had kids or if I was a young person, I might be a little bit more worried about it. But right now, it's like I gotta bide my time for another 20 years, and I'm gonna be done.
I think Jay's right. I mean, you can really get upset and not sleep at all if you're worried about privacy on the internet and your data going out there and everything. So I would just say, enjoy the internet. Don't worry about shrinkage, I guess, unless it's a
hey, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for your call. Have a good night.
Goodbye. Right,
that was a good conversation.
One thing is that, you know, you can fight it or you can embrace it. And, of course, there's in between. But if you fight it, it's going to be a very difficult battle.
You're not going
to really fight. I mean, you're going to have to constantly fight. If you embrace it, it might not be necessarily quite as bad as you think it is.
Well, it's like any other new frontier. You know, if you're going to be one of the early settlers of America and you're going to push west, you know, going on the gold rush and you're going to try to make your fortune.
There's some inherent risks.
There are some inherent risks. But, you know, you have to weigh it out. It's like, I want to do this and I'm willing to go out there and take those risks. And really, you don't know what's over the next hill. And the same thing applies to technology. All of this innovation, all of these things that are making our lives better or making things easier for us, come with risks. And that's part of the whole package. Go ahead, Peter.
My suggestion is, you know, if you really want to fight back and you don't want to, like, install software and stuff like that, just if everybody just acts suspicious. So when you're, like, planning your uncle's birthday party, just talk about it in a kind of odd, off way, like it might be something else. And then eventually they'll get tired of trying to track down all the bizarre, you know, what does it mean that, you know, the cake is blue on Thursday?
Light the candle now.
Just treat everything you're doing like when you schedule lunch, that it's the big event. The wedding will be at noon on Thursday.
We got some long hold times in here.
Yeah, let's see.
Jeff and Bob have been hanging out.
What do we got next, Groovehouse?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Jeff.
Jeff, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. I work on UPS systems, and some of them are 25 years old, and so we have to have a serial port on a computer. And to this point, I know that I think Panasonic Toughbook, they have one that still has a serial port. And it has to be true serial. The little cable that goes from a USB, for some reason, when it's writing to the, you know, programming the chip, it doesn't.
Have you tried, not to interrupt, but have you tried different cables? Have you just tried, like, the cheapy $15 serial cable?
No,
or have you tried,
yeah,
like, the good ones?
As a matter of fact,
ones?
It was a company-wide deal. They've tried several different ways. They allowed us to try it for a while with a certain cable, and it would do it one out of three times, but
let me interrupt you for a second. I seem to recall, you know, having UPSs with serial interfaces designed to configure the UPS or something like that?
It does that. Yeah. Also, when the UPS trips, it'll tell the computer, hey, go into power down mode, or hey, we're having issues, so the computer's aware of when the UPS loses power.
Except we'll use a web card, you know, as well, that goes and communicates on their network, and we'll shut it down and whatnot. But when we get there, you know, we hook up to it, and so we query all the data through that serial port. But more importantly, and we can query the data with one of those good USB cables that converts over, but we can't write to the firmware of our units. And just, for some reason, it doesn't communicate fast enough if it's not the true
the original one, which is RS-232 or something like that.
Yeah, RS-232. Here's my issue with the whole thing is I do a lot of like hardware hacking and stuff. So a lot of these things you do talk serial. You've got a number of different things going on. You can talk 3.3 volt serial. A lot of them speak at 5 volts. There are a number of different factors involved. So I know that like if I just go to Micro Center and I get a USB to serial converter, chances are they're not good, and a lot of them don't work for me. Flicted's found some, and I found some for like $19, and they really do. What defines RS-232, what defines serial, is an FTDI chip. Only one company in Scotland can make them, and they're all the same. So as long as you've got that FTDI, the other variables are going to be the baud rate. So they can go up as high as like 115K. A lot of the cheaper ones won't go that high. And then also, like, will it go both ways? Is it full duplex and stuff like that? So get a good cable and it'll do it. Chances are you guys just got a cable that wouldn't do it.
Well, then, okay, but let me ask this. Because they have had such, and this is a very large company that they do worldwide, and I mean, they're very, but they have pretty much said no for writing to these, they do not allow us to do it with a cable from USB. So, but the problem is finding any up-to-date laptop that has a true serial port on it, for one. I mean, I know Toughbook has them, but then you're spending
What about docking stations?
Well, I that's what I was going to ask you as well. I don't know if you put a docking station on there that then is that a true serial?
It's going to be the same. I think I know what's going on. I think I'm looking at some stuff, and it could be that the firmware, the application you have that updates the firmware, it will not work with virtual COM ports. So you actually need a hardwired serial port. So it's not the hardware. It's how the operating system sees that. So it's the USB is messing with it. So
would a docking station solve that issue or...
Usually docking stations have proprietary connectors that hook the laptop to the docking station. So it's possible that the laptop might actually view that as physically attached hardware and not as a virtualized serial port.
And so as far as knowledge of any laptops made currently with a serial port, they just don't do it anymore, really.
Almost everybody's dropped them as far as I know. Maybe you could take like a shoebox computer, like an actual desktop, like shoebox size computer, because maybe some of them still have physical serial ports. Although even desktops, a lot of them don't have serial ports anymore.
Yeah, and we're so mobile. I mean, we have to go in plants and everywhere. And I guess the Toughbooks or something similar to that, some of the police ones, Gentac or something, they have a true serial port on them. Are they good computers, or are you just paying a whole lot of money for a really good case?
Both.
Okay.
But a lot of them have it because they'll be used out in the field. They'll do like, surveying operations and stuff like that where they do have to still hook up to serial equipment. So, it's a guarantee it'll work, but you're definitely paying a whole bunch just to where if you drop it for 2 feet, it'll be okay. They're usually a little bit slower than most computers because they've got to design the shell. They've got to do everything. They're usually about a generation behind.
Yeah. Well, and then, then I pretty much know which way to go on that. One more quick question for you. As far as whenever I don't need that and I'm just using USB and stuff, are the Lenovo Yogas or whatever, are they a fairly decent computer basically for being able to have touchscreen and being able to flip it over? I'm not trying to use it as a tablet, more just the functionality of being able to switch it around with the touchscreen and are they worth the money, I guess is what I'm asking.
I haven't played with one. I've seen the videos, they looked interesting, but I haven't even ever touched one. So I don't know, have y'all?
No, I know they're getting big. They're taking over. I might have found something for you. So Dell has something. It's called an E Legacy Extender, like capital E dash Legacy Extender. Okay. They've got them for select Dell Studio, Precision Mobile, and some other workstations and laptops. It's like a mini docking station, and it definitely has a serial port. I found it, some people that are doing like real-time programming, PLC programming, this is what they're having to use, because same situation as you, the applications that they need to program the PLCs, it's looking for a real live serial port, not physical, like a virtual port, COM port. Virtual. Yeah, so this will actually do it. E-Legacy Extender by Dell.
And I believe some of the Dells you can actually get now with a broadband card in it from like AT&T or somebody that, so you can dial up. I mean, you know, I know they don't have Wi-Fi, but whenever you're on site and you're at one of these big places, you know, all networks are locked out to you. So
Get one of those hotspots, you can either get the USB ones that stick in, or you can get an external.
He's even talking about like some of them, the HSPVA or whatever it is, that actually come built into the laptops. You've got wireless 4G, you know, whatever you need connected without ever having to plug into anything in the laptop.
Yeah. Do those work like a cell phone works, where if I have Wi-Fi, it will pick that up and use it and not dial in or whatever they do?
Yeah, it's configurable. We've deployed a few of those, and you can actually turn it off. You can disable it. And I believe some of them even have a button where you can disable Wi-Fi and the other on the laptop on the side.
Okay. Well, great. Y'all have been a lot of help, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Have a good one.
You too. All right. 713-526-5738. See, we've got about 10 minutes left, actually about 6 minutes left in the show. So we got a call in the queue. We will take that call, and then we will go from there. So Groovehouse,
yes.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Bob.
Bob, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Well, gentlemen, you got me worried about those pictures of me in a bikini now. What am I going to do with that?
Tell everyone the room is really cold.
Fantastic. All right. Windows 8.1 upgraded a few months ago, and I've noticed that something is hitting the hard drive really hard, a lot more than before. I had just been using SpyBot and Windows Defender, went ahead and put the SpyBot antivirus on it. That's made the computer a little bit clunky, but all the scans with both Defender and SpyBot came up clean. The big question, is there an easy way to see, other than the processes, what is actually writing to the hard drive, so I can just tell what's going on there?
You want to see what your processes are doing in terms of
What's writing to the hard drive?
Yeah.
I haven't used Windows enough in such a long time. I have no idea.
Okay.
Y'all? Anybody?
Not what's writing data specifically to the hard drive, no. You'd have to really understand the processes. I mean, everything's writing to your hard drive. Your operating system's writing to your hard drive. Any open applications writing to your hard drive in terms of temp files. What is it you're trying to discover?
Well, just what's, as of recent, what has just caused such an increase in usage of the hard drive.
Is your hard drive losing a lot of space rapidly?
No, that's the kind of the oddball
always
thing.
Just seem to always be spinning.
It doesn't look like I'm hacked or virused or malwared or anything like that.
Because I was going to say, if it seems like you're losing space, you could probably figure out what files are growing in size or what directory is gaining a lot of new files or something to figure out what's writing somewhere. But if that's not happening, it's just reading and writing. I mean, it possibly could be something that's caching something for a short amount of time to the hard drive, using it as actually, you know, a physical cache instead of RAM. It seems odd, but that could be it.
Well, I mean, it's got a fairly full RAM on it, and it's a big hard drive. So, all righty. Well, I was just curious if, you know, maybe I was something was trying to play on the hard drive that wasn't supposed to
be
there.
Well, if you're worried about the possibility of anything malicious going on your system, you can always, and always every show ends with this, but you can scan for, you can scan for spyware.
Right. Well, like I say, I've been running a SpyBot for years in the background.
Malwarebytes is the latest one. Malwarebytes seems to be doing better than SpyBot Search and Destroy. But,
oh, really?
Yeah. as we've mentioned numerous times on this program.
So you might try 3 or 4 years. Malwarebytes.
Try different tools. Malwarebytes has a free version of
it.
He
said he used Defender and SpyBot.
Yeah, those are a little bit older. And, you know, chances are nothing nefarious is going on. You're just experiencing, you know, how often do you reboot your system?
Maybe once every 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, and how often do you clean out the system, like clean up temporary files and all that nonsense?
Oh, every couple of weeks.
You use a disk cleanup?
I haven't run it in a while, no.
Well, you might run disk cleanup and see about getting rid of it, because Windows does not clean up after itself very well.
Okay.
And I know Windows 8.1 might be a little bit different, but I wouldn't leave a Windows box up for 3 weeks without rebooting. There's going to be some straggler processes and just some stuff kind of funky.
Oh,
I think,
okay.
After a while. Just reboot every few nights and just see if that doesn't make a bit of a difference, too.
All righty. Well, fantastic, guys.
All right.
Thanks
for
the help.
Call. Bye. All right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been mostly using Unix Linux systems, so... When somebody starts talking about trying to troubleshoot that kind of stuff, like, I'm thinking of, you know, Unix commands.
I'm back on Linux at work now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for about the last 4 or 5 months. So it's been, I was liking Windows 7 for a while, but I kicked it out.
I run a virtual because every once in a while I have to have IE for something.
Yeah.
But yeah, my main desktop for several years it was Fedora Linux, and then I flipped to Mac. And then in the last few months, I've started using an Ubuntu system more. Although I've kind of flipped back and forth between the Mac and the Ubuntu system. And then I still have the Fedora system as a third system that I also use sometimes.
Window Manager? I'm doing Enlightenment.
I'm just using the stock ones that come with it. So,
like GNOME or KDE or something? Yeah,
GNOME. I guess it's GNOME on both of them, actually. I tried using KDE. At one point, because I used to use KDE all the time because I didn't like GNOME, and then I started liking GNOME, and I tried KDE recently, and because GNOME 3 annoyed me, but I just didn't like KDE that much either. I haven't tried Enlightenment since, like, you know, 1994 or something.
It hasn't changed a whole lot. It does what you need, though.
All right, well, that's all the calls, and that's all the time, pretty much, that we have left here.
All the calls, all the time.
Used up. All up. Well, I thank Groovehouse for his participation tonight. What?
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're welcome.
We're welcome.
Thank Groovehouse for our participation tonight.
This is like esoteric radio here. I'm telling you what. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We appreciate you being a part of Technology Bites and KPFT here in Houston. If you pledged during the fund drive and you have not paid your pledge, please do so. We did all right. You know, we didn't do 100%, but we did all right. But we need everybody who pledged to make their payments so that, you know, works out for us. So if you got an invoice, please pay it. We will be back next week for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
We're Barrett.
And they are
Groovehouse.
Imagine hearing KPFT even when a thunderstorm has knocked out power to our transmitter. Imagine listening to your favorite KPFT programs when you're out of town. You can. You can listen online with your computer. Go to kpft.org, then click on one of the Listen Live links at the very top of our homepage. We have medium and high fidelity links there for both our regular analog channel and our HD2 channel. See the links at the top of kpft.org. There's more. Imagine being able to hear any KPFT program at any time that fits your schedule. Go to archive.org. www.kpft.org and listen or download any show from the last 2 weeks. For information on subscribing to your favorite show, to download it automatically to your computer, click on the podcast help link at archive.kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Look up, child. World is gone.
Mark your calendar for Friday, February 28th, to hear Amos Lee at Bayou Music Center. Critically acclaimed singer-songwriter Amos Lee has toured with legendary artists like Bob Dylan, Paul Simon, and Adele, and collaborated with Norah Jones, Willie Nelson, and Lucinda Williams. In support of his latest album, Mountains of Sorrow, Rivers of Song, Amos Lee recently appeared on The Tonight Show and Late Night with David Letterman. Don't miss Amos Lee at Bayou Music Center on Friday, February 28th at 8 p.m. Reserve your tickets today at Bayou Music.